So please, get ready, put your hands together for Mr. Mike Scopa.
You know, Fred just introduced me, and I was thinking, who is he talking about? Who is this Disney geek? Who is this Disney nerd? And then I realized it was me, so here I am. I want everybody to know that we are broadcasting live right now on the World Wide Web on WDW Today. So I want all of you out there, thank you. My cohorts over there, Mike Knoll, Mike Wiggenin. Matt Hochberg, stand up. Matt Hochberg, the voice of Walt Disney World today. Now, if you can hear my voice, I want everybody to raise your arms above your head. Come on, everybody. And I want you to give one more time Fred Block a rousing applause. If I had one word to describe your efforts, I'd have to call on Matt Hochberg. Matt, if you could use one word to describe Fred Block's Cruz effort for this. You know, you sing happy birthday to me and I'm all flustered. Give us that one word. Outstanding. Very, very good. So why am I here? Why am I here? On January 31st, Deb Wills sends me an email. And on the email it says, an offer I hope you won't refuse. What am I, in a Godfather sequel? No? So I'm thinking, what could this be? So being an abnormal person, I decided not to open the email and try to figure out what she was talking about. So I came up with three ideas. The first idea was that Deb was going to offer me the opportunity to co-author a book with her. And the book was going to be called Mouse Fest, Sleep Deprivation at Walt Disney World. But that wasn't it, was it, Deb? No, it wasn't it. So, 0 for 1. The second thought was that Deb knows that I love Dole Whip. So I'm thinking, okay, Deb bought the rights to Aloha Isle, and she found a pineapple plantation in Hawaii, and she wanted to go half with me on that. But Deb, was that it? No, that wasn't it either. 0 for 2. All right. So, I came up with what I thought was the actual reason why Deb was sending me an email. And what it was that Deb was going to offer me one of her crack all-ears-net SWAT teams. She was going to let me borrow them, and we were going to have them come down to Walt Disney World. They were going to converge on Pop Century. Under the cloak of night, they were going to work real hard, changing things so that the next day when the guests woke up, they would find themselves in a different resort. And the name of that resort, Mike Newell, was what?
Scopa Towers!
That wasn't it. Actually, it wasn't an offer after all. What it was very much of a compliment and an invitation to come here and talk with all of you. So I was like, oh, wow, this is pretty cool. But I couldn't figure out what to talk about. So I emailed back to Deb and I said, hey, Deb, sounds pretty cool. What can I talk about? And Deb is just great. She has answers for everybody. If you have any questions, you just email Deb and just ask her a question, and she'll be great. So when I said to her, Deb, what should I talk about? She came up with the answer. She said, Mike, whatever you want. All right, so then I started thinking again. All right, what can I talk about? Who's going to be there? What are they going to talk about? Well, that guy Mangiello is going to be there, and that guy Steve Barrett's going to be there, and that guy Dave Marks is going to be there, and MEI Travel is going to be there. And so I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll talk about my book. I'll talk about how I did all my research, and, well, wait a minute. I don't have a book. At least, not yet. I don't have a book. So that one wasn't going to work. Let's see. The second thing I thought was, okay, I know what I can do. I can tell everybody about what goes into making a website, how we publish every day, the research and all that stuff. And then I thought, no, no, no. If I'm out there sitting at one of these tables, I don't want to hear that stuff. So then, when I thought about you sitting at the tables, I thought about what you'd want to hear. And I thought about something very, very important that we're all taught as we're growing up. We're taught this as students. We're trained as speakers to think about this, as authors, when we're in chats, when we're sending an email. And that is, we're thinking about our audience. We're thinking about who we're talking to. We're thinking about who we are chatting with. We're thinking about who we are sending that email to. So I'm thinking about all of you guys. Okay, let me see if I can get into the mind of 350 people. And then I thought, well, they're just like me. You are all Disney geeks. You're all Disney nerds. And we also have a common bond. That common bond is that we've all experienced something. And because we've experienced that, you're here today. Because you've experienced that, you go back to Walt Disney World, to Disneyland. You listen to music. You go to the attractions. You've all experienced this. You've all felt it. You've all seen it. But you can't describe it. And that's called Disney magic. Right? How about this? How about this? Have you ever had a conversation with a relative? Or a friend? Or a coworker? Or a neighbor? And they say to you, I need somebody with a name tag. Randy, I hear you're going back to Walt Disney World. Weren't you there a couple of months ago? Say yes. And so they look at you like you have four heads. Haven't you already been there once before? You shake your head. Shake your head. Okay. And then they say, haven't you done everything?
No way.
No way. No way. Aren't you tired of going back?
No way.
And then the worst thing, I got this twice. They look at you and they say, are you in some kind of a cult? Yeah. They just don't get it. Now, Disney magic makes you do some funny things. Makes you dance. Makes you dance. Of course, I'll have to hypnotize you now because you've seen this. Erase this from your memory. It makes grown people do funny things. And Deb Wills isn't even looking up here. That's good. Uh-oh, she saw it. She's quite a stitch, isn't she? And you get to stand with your favorite princess, other than my wife, of course. And there are other characters that you get a chance to meet up with. That's Disney magic. Now, let me see. Remember I said it's very hard to describe. Very, very hard to describe. You feel it. You've sensed it. It draws you back. I've often said to someone who's asked me about it, I said, I really can't describe it. It's like, it's even harder to describe than writing instructions on how to tie your shoelaces. Try that sometime. It's even more difficult than describing the color green. It's very, very hard. So I thought about that, and I thought, there must be some other people who are having the same kind of problems describing Disney magic. Well, what I wanted to do is I wanted to try to take it apart and talk to you about it and give you the solution. Give you the solution. A couple of years ago, I wrote a column and I called it The Disney Zone. And oh my God, I got more mail from that than a lot of other columns. People would say, yeah, you know, I feel the same way and this and that. And so I thought, That's going to be a key to what's going on with Disney Magic. This guy up here is Jay Rizzullo. I was fortunate enough last month to go to New York City and attend the announcement for the Year of a Million Dreams. He's the chairman of the Disney Parks and Resorts. He's the main guy who makes all the decisions for all the attractions and stuff. So Jay's up there on the stage, and he's talking about something that the Disney company has recognized, and that is the effect of a Disney environment, the effect that takes place with all of you when you walk through the turnstiles. He called it a transformational effect, saying that once you walk in, things begin to happen. You change. Your attitude, your approach changes. You're surrounded by all this stuff. He was stealing my thunder. Transformational effect, to me, means the Disney zone. In order for you to get that Disney magic feeling, you need to be in that Disney zone. So I'm thinking, okay, if you're in that Disney zone, how do you know you're in that Disney zone? So I thought of, there must be some kind of sign that you're getting to that point where you're just feeling really good. Now there are three signs I want to talk about. If, when I'm describing these signs, if it sounds like something that you go through, I want you to shake your head. At least then I know I'm on the right track. The first sign that you're in a Disney zone is that you're smiling when you're in the theme park. Well, wait a minute, Mike. I'm smiling all the time. I smiled this morning when I came in. I saw Fred Block, his big smile. I'm sure you do smile. But do you smile more often when you're in a theme park, during the day when you're in a theme park, than you are like today? Yeah. How about when you're at a character meal and you see a character, Winnie the Pooh, let's say you're in Chef Mickey's, Crystal Palace, Breakfastsaurus, and you see a character go up to a little child and the child starts dancing and singing with the character. Big smile. Big smile. You're beginning to feel really good. When we talk about the Disney zone, we talk about a state of mind in which no more pressure, no more worries, no more cares. They're on the other side of the turnstiles. They're on the other side of those weird biometric machines. Am I right? It's true. We go there, we forget about our cares, we forget about our worries. So how many of you, raise your hands, have smiled while in a Disney theme park? If I don't see everybody raising their hand, we're going to give you a refund. Okay. That's the first sign. That's like phase one that you're getting into the Disney zone. Ooh, sorry. How many times have you been on an attraction, Soarin', be it a ride or a show, or even if you're in Matt's favorite park, MGM Studios, and you're watching Streetmosphere, and you find yourself chuckling, laughing, giggling, pretty happy. How many of you have laughed or giggled in a Disney theme park? You're all Disney nerds. You're all Disney nerds. I have too. Okay, the first sign was smiling. Second sign was laughing or giggling. Now here's a third sign that some of you probably don't realize that you're in the Disney zone when this happens, but I'm sure I'm going to see a lot of people tipping their heads. How many here have seen Wishes? How many here have seen Illuminations? All right. When you watch Wishes, you hear the song. Chastity Ferris is the name of the little girl who starts singing Starlight, Starlight, the whole business. Pretty awesome. And then you watch the whole show. Your eyes are glued to the castle, the fireworks. And then at the end it finishes, and then there's the song at the end. Okay, keep that in your thoughts. Or when you go to Illuminations and you're watching the show, and I'm a big fan of Kelly Coffey, as is Mr. Fred Block. And Kelly sings We Go On, and she also sings Promise. Now, two things. Wishes at the end, Illuminations at the end. Let me ask one more question. How many of you here have been to Disney World during the holidays within the last 2 years. All right, keep those hands up. Keep your hand up if you also watched the Christmas tag at the end of Illuminations. All right? Okay, keep your hand up, and those of you who have your hands down, I want you to raise your hand if at any time watching Wishes or Illuminations or at any other point while you're in a theme park, you had tears in your eyes. Ooh. That's the third sign. Why? We're happy? I don't know. I'll tell you, there's another attraction that brings tears to my eyes. Festival of the Lion King. How many have seen Festival of the Lion King? You know the portion of the show where they have the children parading? I lose it. I just lose it. Okay, so we've talked about those three signs. The formula for Disney Zone and moving from the Disney Zone to a Disney Magic kind of a environment. It's got to be a balance of three components, and that's what we're going to talk about, and then we're going to go into something else that's going to help you explain it to your friends who just don't get it. Number one, you guys. Charlie. Bill? Bill! Lynn! Guests who have to be there. Disney Magic can't take place if there's nobody there to receive it, nobody there to enjoy it, nobody there to experience it. So the first part of the formula, the first part of the recipe is the guests. Number two. The second part is the Disney environment. You have to be in the parks. You have to be listening to the music. You have to be in the presence of the castle or whatever. But if you're in the Disney environment, that's another thing. So we're in this room, maybe a little bit smaller than this, and there's a huge stage and there's a huge video wall, and they're showing this. And as they're showing it, I'm seeing, you know, that the first girl, I talked with her. She was there, and wow, I didn't know you were a cast member. Oh yeah, and stuff, and all those cast members were there. Jay Rizzullo paraded the cast members out onto the stage and introduced each one of them. They came out in their uniforms, and you may have met Mary. She's at the Animal Kingdom, and she had her uniform on. You may have met Jose. He cleans the bathrooms, blah, blah, blah. The woman who was in this video, who was crying at the end, when the video ended, who do you think came out from behind the video wall? But it was her. So the whole crowd just went, oh my God, we stood up, we clapped. It was really, really something. It's a very, very emotional, video. And I don't know if anybody will see this on television or whatever, but I figured this was a DVD that was given to us when I was there. And I figured I'd share it with you because it was going to move me towards another part of this discussion. And that is that I'm going to ask a question. I want, show of hands, who were most of those people up there? Who were they? Cast members. And while they were up there talking, how many of you were smiling? How many of you were laughing a little bit? And how many of you had something in your eye? Ooh. That third sign that you're in the Disney Zone? Tears. The three recipes, the three components. Once more. You, receiving Disney Magic. Two, the Disney environment. Three, the most important aspect is the cast members. How they make us feel when we're down there. Okay, so we're getting close. Now we're going to get down to the nitty-gritty. We need to figure out a way to tell our friends how to get it, why we get it, why we keep going back. So I'm going to tell you a story, true story. And I'm hoping that you will go back home and talk to your neighbors, talk to your relatives, talk to your... You have a question? I want you right out here. No, what's your chair? No, I want you to sit down. What's your name?
Stormy.
Right here, Stormy. Okay, I want to tell you a story that began 50 years ago. Actually, it began 51 years ago. Now, Storm, you have to sit down because you're going to make me tired. And I just had a birthday. I'm 25. Now, this story begins 51 years ago. It's a little bit of a trivia question. And is there any trivia people in here? Does anybody know? Brian, do you know what happened about 51 years ago? Was it July 17th or was it September? Was it July? July. Okay. That's where this story begins. 51 years ago, Disneyland opened, and, you know, that was the start of something really special. One thing that Walt Disney said, I think we're haunted. How you doing, Walt? How am I doing? He said, Disneyland will never be complete. Disneyland will continue to grow. It will get bigger. It will get more beautiful. And that still happens today. With that in mind, about a few years after he opened Disneyland, he came up with an idea. Now pay attention because I'm going to call on one of you guys. He decided that he wanted to extend Main Street USA. He wanted to build two districts at the end of Main Street USA. The first district he wanted to call International Street, with shops with a European flair, you know, Asian restaurants, blah, blah, blah. On the other side, he wanted to build something that he called Edison Avenue, talking about technology, specifically focusing on electricity, the advancements of electricity over the previous 50 years. So he met with his Imagineers, and he had all these great plans. But one of the problems that Walt Disney had was that he was so progressive in his thinking that he was too far ahead of his time. And the technology that he envisioned for some of the attractions just wasn't there. So lots of times he just had to put things on the shelf. But I want you to think about those two districts. International Street, Edison Avenue. I think the attraction that he had envisioned for Edison Avenue was to be hosted by somebody called K. Wilbur Watt or something like that. But International Street, Edison Avenue. World Showcase, Future World. Even back in the late 50s, he had a vision. He had a vision. So he said, well, if I can't do what I really want to do with this Edison Avenue thing, then I'm not going to even bother with International Street. So the plans got put aside. A couple of years later, plans started taking place for the construction of the 1964 World's Fair. All these companies were contacted. Hey, would you like to be part of the New York World's Fair? I think it was in Flushing Meadows. And one of these companies was General Electric. General Electric, bringing good things to life, yada, yada, yada. So they wanted to not just participate in the New York World's Fair, but they also wanted to be very successful. They wanted to be, you know, one of the companies that gets visited most often. So they needed someone to help them. They needed somebody who could put together something very entertaining. Why not talk with Walt Disney? So they contacted Walt. They said, hey, we want to partner with you. We want you to help us build this pavilion. We have really no idea as to what we want to do. We have some thoughts, but we want you to help. So he said, well, let me go back and talk to my Imagineers. Maybe we can come up with something. Of course, he had something waiting in the wings. And it was the Edison Avenue ideas. Now, getting back to that, one of the problems he had was that, again, the technology wasn't there and he really wasn't in a position to fund research to do that. But now he had a company, General Electric. I'll write you the check. You tell me, you know, how much, and we'll put something together. So Walt came back and he said, okay, this is what we'd like to do. We want to tell the story of electricity. We want to tell the story of electricity over the last 50 or 60 years. Well, how are you going to do that, Walt? Well, we're thinking about building a stage with six dividing areas, and each area will represent a decade in which electricity made some advancements. And we'll have about a four-minute story for each section. Okay, that sounds good. What else? Well, are you going to have people? How are you going to have people tell the story? Well, we're not going to have people tell the story. What do you mean you're not going to have people tell the story? What he said is that we're not going to have people on stage. We're going to have performers, but they're going to be called audio animatrons. What's an audio animatron? Well, it's sort of like a robot, you know, it's going to, you know, tell you the story, blah, blah, blah. Well, what's the advantage of having an audio animatron? Number one, no lunch breaks. Number two, no labor strikes. Number three, no one's going to ask for a raise. Most importantly, they're going to work all day, and every single guest who comes to the show is going to get the same experience. So General Electric thought about it. Well, what are we going to call it? Well, we're going to call it Progress Land. All right, let's do it. So Walt went to work. The Imagineers went to work. Now, here's where it gets... Here's where the Disney magic story begins. General Electric is throwing a lot of money into Walt Disney's area to develop this attraction. Obviously, they want to protect their investment. So they assigned one executive to watch over this construction. I don't know what his first name was, but I know his last name was Stolberg. So Mr. Stolberg, who was an executive at General Electric, oversaw the construction. Yeah, we like this, now let's change this, blah, blah, blah. He got real friendly with the Imagineers. So friendly, in fact, that one of them came up to him and said, I'm going to pretend that Randy is Stolberg. Randy, you know this attraction we're building? We think that you are the perfect model for that guy that's going to be right on the front of the stage. Well, you're the typical, you know, father figure, blah, blah, blah. He was in his mid-30s at the time. So he thought, this would be really cool. What are you going to do to me? Well, we're going to take a mold of your face. We're going to mold the character after you. You're going to be at the center of each stage presentation. And you're going to be talking, blah, blah, blah. Hey, this is really cool. Let's keep this a secret. Let's not tell anybody. Don't tell my wife. Don't tell my brother. Don't tell my mother. Don't tell Fred Block. Don't tell anybody. So they kept it a secret. What he wanted to do is he wanted to take his family to the New York World's Fair without letting them know, having them sit down, watch the show, and, hey, Mom, it's Dad! You know? It was pretty cool. So the show opened up, a great success. Progress Land was probably the most popular attraction at the New York World's Fair. Problem happened, though. Before Mr. Stolberg could take his family to see him, he died. He passed away unexpectedly, along with the secret. Whoa. So no one knew. Before the World's Fair closed, however, his brother happened to make a trip about a few days before the World's Fair closed. Went to Progress Land because he knew his brother had worked on that. Sat down, watched the show, and was blown away when he saw the image of his brother up on stage. He talked to a few of the employees there, made some phone calls, and over the next week or so, he found out that was indeed the model for his father, for his brother. He called his sister-in-law, her name is Doris at the time, and Stormy, you're listening to me, right? I know I should be looking at you, but I mean, this I know it's a long story, but you may need tissue. You may need a few pieces of Kleenex afterwards. He talked to the widow. Her name is Doris, and said, "You won't believe this. Blah blah blah. You know, so and so. I forget his first name. So and so. You know, he's actually in this attraction. You got to come see it." "Well, I can't. I've got these kids and everything." And the attraction closed. Whoa. Eventually, of course, it came to Walt Disney World. And in the late 90s, this man's daughter, her name is Joanne Stolberg Alger, happened to visit Walt Disney World, knew about this, her mother had talked about it, went to the Carousel of Progress, saw her father, went back, talked to her mother. "Mom, you got to come see. It's Dad. It's Dad." At that point, Doris Stolberg was 78. "Well, maybe we can go in January." So January 2003, that's how recently this happened, they planned to go to Walt Disney World. So Joanne could show her mother Doris Carousel Progress. So Joanne sent an email to the Disney Reservation Center and said, "I'm bringing my mother in January. And I want to know if I can get a special ticket that will allow me to take my mother just to see the Carousel of Progress. And here's why. It tells the whole story. The cast member who received this email was Elizabeth Meyer. Now, she used to work in the events group in the Magic Kingdom. And she sensed that this is something special. We just don't want to overlook this. This is something very special to this family. So she talked to the events group, and they said, send an email back to Joanne and tell her to let us know when she gets to the theme park. Tell her to go over to the guest relations and let us know she's there, and we'll have a welcoming committee there. So what happens? January, I think it was January 4th, 2003. They get there, and I think the guy's name was Marvin Smith, who was operations manager at Magic Kingdom, arranged for them to have a one-day park hopper pass. They were escorted to Tomorrowland, where the Tomorrowland guest services manager, her name was Judy Paulson, had arranged for a photographer to be there, and had arranged for them to have a special private showing of the Carousel of Progress. So they took photos in front of the sign and everything, and then they went in, a small party, a very private showing. So they sit down, and the show begins. Everybody's really quiet. It was Joanne, her mother, Doris, and her daughter, Shannon. So they're sitting down, and the show begins. Now, as soon as this guy shows up, Doris takes her hand, it goes to her mouth. Mouth is open, her eyes begin to well up. It happened with everybody who was in the party. Everybody who was in that theater at that time could feel the emotion. When she saw the star of the show, she said, it's just like I remember him. That's a pretty magical moment. Well, they took pictures of, after the show, they took pictures of themselves in front of Dad. And here's where I come to storm. Give me your hand. Joanne goes over to, Doris, the widow, goes over to Elizabeth, takes her by the hand, takes out a photograph, shows a picture of her husband. The resemblance was uncanny. And then she says to Elizabeth, oh my God, thank you so much. You have no idea what this means to me. And of course, everybody lost it. It gets better. It gets better. They take photographs, and Elizabeth says to Joanne and Shannon and Doris, meet me in front of the city hall at 2 o'clock so that we can give you your photos. Great. So they meet them in front of the city hall at 2 o'clock, and there's something else waiting for them. I believe Dean Gasser is the guy. He had arranged for them to be grand marshals for the Share a Dream Come True parade. Whoa, really cool. Mouse ears, the whole business, okay? They get in the car and everything, and they're going through the parade, and Dora, she's 78 years old, but she's like a child. They're smiling. They're laughing. And they're crying. Okay? That's a very special and a true story. That was in a Disney Management newsletter. And it was sent to me by a dear friend out in California. The point I want to make is that none of those magical moments would have happened if there was no Elizabeth Meyer, Judy Paulson, Marvin Smith, Dean Gashler, cast members doing what they do best, and that's make us feel special. And that's what Disney Magic is all about. Yeah, it's theme parks. Yeah, it's music. Yeah, it's Mickey, I guess. But it's people. They treat us the way we want to be treated. They don't get paid that much. But a lot of them just enjoy. You saw the video. They just enjoy what they do. And I think that's why we go back, because we're treated very special by them. It's all about the people. Disney Magic is all about the people. So the next time you go into a theme park and a Disney cast member does something very, very nice for you, you know, thank them. I wanted to show one of my best friends down there, Jimmy McKinley. He works in the Magic Kingdom, and he's one of these guys who went to the Walt Disney story with him, and the last 5 minutes he was just weeping. He just loves Walt Disney, and he is the best model that I could give of someone who really, really loves what he does, and he loves making us happy. So that's my story. So if you get a chance to talk to those people who just don't get it, you know, tell them this story and tell them that the reason why you go back to Disney World, Stormy, is because we're going back to some people who really make us feel good, make us forget about our worries, bring us into the Disney zone, and give us Disney magic. Thank you very much. Have a good time.